Well, just shy of a year ago, luxury cruise liner Ruby Princess returned to Sydney from a tour of New Zealand and became Australia's biggest COVID cluster in the early months of the pandemic. The ship pulled into Fiordland, Dunedin and Akaroa and then docked in Wellington and Napier before returning to Sydney, seeding cases in Hawke's Bay. On board were 2,700 passengers, some of which had been infected with COVID-19. Almost a week before they disembarked, New South Wales Professor of Public Health Medicine, David Durham, described cruise liners and virus spread as, quote, a petri dish environment, unquote. Eventually, more than 900 Ruby Princess passengers and crew were diagnosed with the virus, and 28 people died. Our guest is the former private investigator turned award-winning investigative journalist, Duncan McNabb. He's penned The Ruby Princess, the truth behind the 21st century plague ship, how negligence and corporate greed led to death and disaster. In the book, Duncan sets out in detail the events and decisions leading to passengers disembarking from that fateful cruise on the 19th of March, disgorging into the veins of the city's road, rail and bus network. Duncan McNabb is with us from Sydney. Welcome, Duncan. Thanks for your time.
Good morning and thank you.
There was a commission of inquiry of sorts into this. Can you sum up at the outset what drove the decision making or lack of decision making around this vessel and where it went when?
I suppose there are two key things that always capture me. First of all, the obvious one, 2,700 people disgorging into the middle of Sydney's CBD in peak hour, going to their homes around the city, around the state, around the country, and about 600 or so people travelling internationally. So that's a massive amount of spread. That was problem enough because one bloke actually told me they felt like being herded off the ship, no social distancing, no masks, no nothing. And it wasn't until the next day, mid-morning, that they actually got the COVID-19 tests back from people who had been unwell on board and got the seriously bad news that there were, in fact, people positive on board. So by that stage, everyone had been scattered to the four winds. That was a cascade of human error, communications problems. Everything went wrong that day. But the other thing that grabbed me is why, when you've got ships like the Diamond Princess, the Grand Princess, ships from various cruise lines around the world with virus spreading rapidly through them, why the hell you would sail the Ruby Princess on the 8th of March? That was also the issue. Carnival cruisers say they're acting with the best possible medical advice, but you would think, in my view anyway, that prudence would suggest that you wouldn't have sailed it. And medical experts who do know what they're talking about have later said that the ship should really never have sailed that day. So you've got two major problems as far as I can see it.
But when you sum up what drove the decision making, was it ignorance or were there other forces at play?
The decision to sail the ship, I think, may have been they rolled the dice. They thought they had everything nailed, but they didn't. And, you know, ships don't make money when they're sitting in port. They make money when they're at sea. As for the errors made in New South Wales when the ship came back, it was a cascade of human error. New South Wales Health didn't get updates on the worsening conditions on the ship before it docked. It was low risk when they assessed it that afternoon. By the time it was in port, it was medium risk. They didn't ask the ship for updates, and likewise, the ship omitted apparently to send an email saying of the talking about the worsening conditions on board. So that then cascaded into what became the disasters was the Ruby Princess.
So, as we said, not the first COVID ship. The Westerdam, the Diamond Princess had raised alarms the month before. Why was it allowed to set sail?
Well, ultimately, the decision to sail the ship, I think, rests with the cruise line. They departed Sydney that day with the clean bill of health from New South Wales authorities. Everything looked all right on board. That's fine. But I think the decision to actually sail the ship rests with the operators rather than the government. And that's what I think happened in these circumstances.
Can you describe what it's like on board? They're massive, these ships, aren't they?
I've only been on one once myself. But everyone I spoke to love cruising because it gives them a fixed price holiday, which is a good start. A touch of luxury. They get away, they can escape. And it's a very comfortable environment, particularly for older passengers who aren't after an adventure. They're just after a break from their routine. Cruise lines offer that. They offer excellent service, incredibly hardworking crew trying to make them happy, who live in conditions that are unspectacular on a good day. Low paid, bit cramped downstairs, and they see daylight pretty much when they're above looking after the passengers. So it's, if you're one of the 2,700 on board, you have people dedicated to making sure you have a good time. You know what you're getting. It's a very, very comfortable environment for cruisers. But that sort of changed on the Ruby Princess and the other ships as well. What they realized that some people were actually trapped on board these ships, in which a virus was spreading quite quickly. And that's the appalling fact of all this, that the pleasure of the cruise departed fairly quickly when reality kicked in.
Let's talk March 8. It's in Sydney. Mm. The time of the release of passengers from the just ended cruise, right? So this is before the trip to New Zealand. They'd waited for test results and boarding of new passengers. The timing between those two things is just incredible. Like, what happened?
Yeah, the ship turned up, and normally the ships sort of dock in the wee small hours of the morning and passengers leave shortly after dawn or thereabouts. The Ruby Princess had come back in that day and had been designated as a medium risk ship, which meant various protocols came into play, one of which was making sure that the unwell passengers were tested for COVID-19 and they had to stay on board until those test results came back. Now, that happened. The ship was extensively cleaned when it came back in. Passengers waiting for that last trip were delayed and delayed and delayed. So rather than boarding about midday, which is a normal thing, because cruise lines like to get one lot off, clean up, restock and get them back on fast as possible and get out to sea. The boarding was delayed and delayed and delayed. And eventually, when the COVID-19 tests came back and those tests were negative, those passengers were allowed off. And then the 2,700 people were allowed on board. This happened sort of around about dusk, for example, and I think the ship sailed later that evening. Everyone on board thought everything was fine. They'd been reassured that there was no COVID-19 problems on board. The ship had been meticulously cleaned. Everybody, including the crew, thought they were sailing in a very safe environment. What happened a few days later was they started to find out there were problems. And they're the problems that they brought back with them to Sydney 11 days later.
The Special Commission of Inquiry that was held, though, found that several cases of illness should have been treated as suspected COVID-19 before it even entered New Zealand waters. And is there a gap between the tests that came back and a more prudent approach, given what was unfolding in the world at the time? What did the Commission say?
Yeah, I think the prudent approach, everyone says, in hindsight, everyone says the prudent approach would not to have been sail the ship on that day, on the 8th of March. The Commission of Inquiry noted, I think, that there were some COVID-19 tests which came back negative, which were done in Wellington. But there are only a handful of those. And, you know, let's face it, we've got over 4,000 people on board. So those handful of tests were probably not representative. So they were done in Wellington. They came back as negative. That's fine. The ship sails on. But people on board are getting sicker and sicker and more cases are coming forward. And that was a problem. And when it came back to Sydney, the test results took almost 36 hours from the time they were taken to the time the results came up. And by that stage, everyone was gone.
Just staying with I was just going to say before we get into that, staying with the New Zealand leg, because this is fascinating for us, because this was getting closer and closer to our lockdown. But around this time the ship was here, things were really mixed. We were talking about whether we were going to cancel events that were due to happen around the 15th of March, big events, commemorations of the mosque attacks, a big festival. And then this ship was docking at ports around the country. And it was actually... Yep. It was the Ruby Princess visit that actually prompted or was very close to, within days of the announcement of the lockdown. But it was the Hawke's Bay DHB, the local Hawke's Bay DHB, that said, do these tests in Wellington before you come and dock here. They then did come and dock here. No other tests carried out after that Wellington stopover. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. Wellington was the only place in New Zealand where they were testing. The ship doesn't have testing facilities on board. I think they can take a swab, but they actually can't then process the testing. So Wellington was the only spot in New Zealand where that happened. And the other thing, passengers are telling me they're getting off at the various stops around New Zealand. And again, there's no masking. There's occasional temperature checks, but that's about it. People pretty much go about their business as normal cruisers. And that was something that struck some of the passengers. There was very little attention to health issues as they get off the boat. They tour around the town for the day, and then they get back on in the afternoon. They were not noticing any particular checks of any, you know, any consistent health checks in New Zealand at all, apart from the COVID-19 tests were done in Wellington. So a lot of ignorance, I think, at that stage. We didn't come to grips with the problem that was sailing around New Zealand.
Dunedin, Akaroa, Napier, Tauranga, Auckland Bay of Islands, the ship docks.
Mm.
Let's talk about what happens, though, as it nears its return to Sydney. Just to be clear, was there an official risk level on it at the point it set sail first on March 8th?
I think it was just all clear to sail. Everyone left Sydney thinking the ship was fine. There were they don't do a risk assessment before it leaves, I don't think, but the assumption was the ship was being cleaned. We've got negative tests back from the passengers. Everything's right to go. We've cleaned it. Beautiful. Off we go. They sailed happily out the door thinking they were leaving their cares behind, little realising that the exact opposite was the case. So and as you said earlier, as they're cruising across the Tasman, people are starting to get sick. People are actually feeling unwell and cancelling their visits into town because they're unwell. A couple of passengers I spoke to got in, spent the morning. One of them started to feel unwell. They go back to the boat. They feel a little bit better. The next town they're at, they get off, they wander around, they're feeling unwell again. They think this is not getting any better. They get back on the boat. So, you know, that's the issue you've got to deal with in New Zealand as well. These people are just walking around innocently and later prove positive for COVID-19. I just don't think anyone was coming to grips with the magnitude of the problem.
Let me correct myself. It wasn't the lockdown that was announced within a day or two of the ship. It was the closing of the borders in New Zealand that was announced just within a day or two of the ship.
Yes.
So things were changing very, very rapidly and very, very quickly. Can we ask also, before we talk about the return to Sydney, the owner, sure, Carnival, the company, what advice was it required to be acting on, and what advice was it acting on?
To sail the ship, the Carnival, my recollection was Carnival said that they made the decisions to sail the ship based on the best possible advice they had from organisations like the US Centre for Disease Control in Atlanta. They thought that they were acting on the best possible advice, and that's one of the decisions they made to sail the ship. And at that stage too, there was a significant absence of COVID-19 issues in Australia as well, but that changed fairly fast afterwards as well. So their story is that they were acting completely and utterly on the best available medical advice. Now, subsequent to that, I think other experts have said, well, that's fine, but prudence would have suggested, given the problems elsewhere in the world, that you might have not sailed the ship. And that is something that's going to play out in the courts for a lot of years.
What is the status of this right now, legally?
At the present, there are a couple of things running, and there's still a major police inquiry which has yet to report, and that's looking at a whole range of things. Some of that police work was formed the basis of the Commission of Inquiry. The reason for the police investigation will ultimately lead to a coronial inquest, which will look at the circumstances on board. That's a fair way off. At the same time, late July, early August last year, a class actions commenced in Australia against the operators of the cruise ship by passengers on the Ruby Princess. That's in Australia. That's still underway. That's going to take a while to resolve. And likewise, there are also various actions against Carnival and other cruise lines, for that matter, too, in the United States. And they're popping up rapidly as well. So there is a lot of lawyers sitting around on this, probing exactly what happened and who was at fault. It's going to be a long, long journey.
Just how bad was it getting on board that boat during the course of this cruise and ahead of its return to Sydney? How many people and how sick?
I think the number of people getting sick was rising quickly. I'm not sure of the actual numbers. They were just reporting with unwell. There are very unwell people who were actually transported off the ship by ambulance when it docked. And they were later found to be positive for COVID-19, and they were taken straight to hospital and in isolation.
Crew getting board, sick in the galleys with a sick crew?
Yeah, well, it's a hype. There have been reports that the likelihood was that the COVID-19 spread came from the galley. So crew members are getting unwell. And one of the great sadnesses, or as we sometimes overlook, is that the afternoon after it returned to Sydney on the 19th of March, 2,700 people got off. Around about 1,000 crew are still on board. They sail that day out of Sydney Harbour, thinking that the ship is safe, that they are well clear of the problem, and they actually have a party on board, enjoying for the first time the luxury that the ship usually gives to others. It's not until about 24 hours later that they realise that the ship has COVID-19 on board. The passengers have tested positive, crew members have tested positive, and all of a sudden they are stuck on a ship that one of them described 5 weeks later as being like being on a floating prison. They had no idea what their fate was. They were spent a couple of weeks at sea. They finally landed at Port Kembla, just south of Sydney, and sat there for a couple of weeks as well before the ship were allowed to repatriate prisoners. Before they were able to repatriate some of the crew members. And then the ship finally took off to sea, and it's still cruising around mid-Pacific with about 120-odd people on board waiting for the green light to return to cruising.
Can we talk about the return to Sydney and what happened here? Surely the health officials in New South Wales would have been onto it by the time the ship came back, at least. But what happened that meant they were unaware, New South Wales Health was unaware of the deepening crisis on board?
Pretty straightforward. New South Wales Health, as you come back into Australia, you know, Australian biosecurity is somewhat well known internationally. The reports from the ship caused the New South Wales Health to assess the ship as being low risk. And that was sort of mid-afternoon, I suppose, on the day before it arrived. As the ship got closer to Sydney, people were getting sicker and sicker, reporting illnesses that may have been COVID-19 symptoms. As the ship is coming into the heads around about, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, New South Wales Health haven't sought an update on conditions on board the ship now. That should have been done. Likewise, the ship hasn't reported back to New South Wales Health saying, hey, it's getting worse on board. So by the time the ship actually docked, it was really a medium risk ship and should have been handled entirely differently. But the confluence of mistakes meant it was still low risk. So it was congratulations, everyone can leave. Thanks. And that's what prompted the debacle. And then you compound that with the slowness to come back with the positive or negative tests, which took, as I say, about 36 hours to come back. So these human errors just compound. So you've got literally 2,700 people scattered to the four winds before anyone knows what's going on. And about a day later, they realise the mistake.
What is the consequence? Is it measurable, the amount of COVID spread from this?
I don't think it's actually fully measurable. I mean, we've got, say, around 900 cases. We know around 28 people have died. But also we need to factor in, this is where it gets tricky, the number of people, for example, who've travelled back to the US, to Canada and to Europe that we may not know about. We know a couple of people who went to the US have died, but the full spread of the disease courtesy of this ship in the US, I don't think we'll ever be able to get a handle on either, because the US passengers arrived back into a situation that was darkening very quickly as well. So the actual scope of this problem, I don't think we'll ever gather. And just as a curiosity too, and it's a dreadful thing, a couple of passengers went back to northwest Tasmania. And as a consequence of some errors made in health, people actually going to work when they shouldn't have and all that sort of stuff, you ended up with two hospitals, the public and the private, being closed down over Easter last year because of the spread of COVID-19 from passengers from the Ruby Princess. And I think the locals, about 3,000 or 4,000 people, ended up being locked down.
The politics of blame you write about as well, and who was pointing at whom over this, and what did the Royal Commission have to say?
Yes. There were lots of pointing of blame in the early days. I think the commission inquiry is spot on the money, that the issue substantially is that of New South Wales Health. The original pointing was Health pointing, New South Wales pointing at the federal government, saying Border Force should have intervened and all that sort of stuff. And that bickering continued for quite some time and flared up a few occasions. The commission of inquiry and Border Force too were quite clear about it. The responsibility for biosecurity, the responsibility for the health of the people rests entirely for New South Wales Health. The head of Border Force, I think, very early on popped up and did a very strong press conference where he said, and I still remember this, there are three red lights when a ship arrives in Sydney, and those red lights have to go green before anyone is allowed off. But ultimately, it's a decision on health that is the final light to say, okay, you're right to go. And on the 19th of March, that green light shouldn't have gone, sorry, that red light should not have gone green.
Just finally...
As an oddity, a couple... Yeah.
No, you go ahead.
Sorry. As an oddity, around about the time the Ruby Princess was arriving in Sydney, another liner came into Melbourne where they actually held everyone on board until the COVID-19 tests had come back as a negative and then let them go. So it's an interesting disparity. Just, one that should never have happened, of course.
Just finally, I know you've talked to a lot of people as part of this work, and including, you know, what the passengers have had to say. Do you believe the cruise industry will come out of this pandemic? Will it rebound? Are people that dedicated, who love it, that dedicated to it, that it will rebound to where it was? Or has the experience of people on these ships perhaps permanently changed attitudes? What do you think?
It's a bit of a split decision. I think overwhelmingly I've found that people are keen to get back on board as soon as it is safe to do so. And that means, you know, being reassured by the cruise lines that everything is absolutely flawless on board and that people are vaccinated. Then again, some of them have said to me, we'll never get back on a cruise line again. That's the last. But there is a dedicated hardcore group of cruisers. This is what they want to do. This is what they love. And they're waiting for the opportunity to get back on board. So I think the cruise industry will bounce back. It is a massive industry. It feeds into so many businesses. It will rebound. I think it'll actually rebound quite quickly once we're all reassured that this time around there'll be no mistakes and that people are properly vaccinated before they're getting on board. Scrupulous health checks by government and by the Lions are the key to all this.
Duncan, thank you. The Ruby Princess is his book, The Truth Behind the 21st Century Plague Ship, How Negligence and Corporate Greed Led to Death and Disaster.